All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman. Today we are talking about the Atlanta Falcons at the stroke of midnight, practically getting the deal done just before training camp starts with Julio Jones. No more holdout, no more drama. We'll talk about what that deal means for the present and future for Julio Jones and his Falcons team.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon websites on the internet. Of course, on Twitter at FalcFans, and the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today, we're talking about the Falcons getting the deal done with Julio Jones. A lot of feelings, a lot of wishing, going back and forth. You know, me as the person who overanalyzes things. At one point, I was saying, hey, you know, people being overly dramatic, this is not a big deal. It's going to be fine. And then, you know, comes out that one day Julio's holding out, and I'm like, oh no, over that 24-hour period, or really that 36-hour period before that news dropped Tuesday morning and the deal getting done late Wednesday night. Went through a lot of feelings, a lot of emotions going back and forth, and because I tend to overanalyze things, you know, starting to play out scenarios in my head. Is Julio going to miss week one? Those sorts of things. But I should have stuck to my guns, should have listened to Will, should have listened to all the other people, myself included, earlier that were saying this is not a big deal, and it wasn't, you know. And I think it's funny because that news sort of broke at 11:50 on Wednesday, 11:50 p.m. Eastern time, and I had just uploaded the episode I recorded with Charles that you guys just heard yesterday around 11:20. And if only, you know, that breaking news could have came out like 20 minutes earlier or whatever, I could have stopped the publish on that episode and thrown on, like, you know, tacked on another 5-10 minutes at the end of that episode talking about, hey, they got the deal done, you know, disregard the other stuff. But, you know, it is what it is. I'm upset because the Falcons inconvenienced my podcasting schedule. I like to be on top of these things. I like being the first person that you guys hear on these late breaking Falcons news because of the rapid reactions and all that. That's one of the benefits of doing a daily podcast. And I think, once again, Thomas Dimitroff did that waiting because he knows the podcast goes up at 12:01. So he was like, 11:51, I'm gonna mess with Aaron a little bit here. And, you know, it was like, we'll drop this news so late that even Aaron can't give a rapid reaction. Ha! See if he likes that, you know? Touche, Thomas Dimitroff. Score one for TD in the epic battle between myself and him that has been ensuing in my dreams and in my head and on Twitter for the last 4 years, 4 or 5 years. Just go look at the hashtag Dimitroff. It's like 90% of the tweets is me. But anyway, you know, I think it's interesting because you heard Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff's press conference. I'm going to be serious now. You heard Dan Quinn, Tom TD's press conference today, as players were reporting at the training camp. I thought it was interesting that Dan Quinn said that he knew all along that Julio was coming to camp. I thought that was an interesting tidbit. And I certainly believe Dan Quinn when he said that. I think that's probably true. He could be, you know, sort of massaging the truth a little bit to make it seem like, you know, the Falcons, you know, Dimitroff and Pioli being from that New England school of running things, trying to control the narrative. I take Dan Quinn at his word. It didn't seem like that was something he was making up. But I thought that was interesting because it feels like it's sort of symptomatic of something I've ranted about before when it comes to some, you know, not always having the greatest media coverage of this team given the relative size of the market. And sort of, I think this whole situation was indicative. It seemed like, you know, as many people said, but not everybody, you know, everything was smooth sailing. The two sides were talking the whole time. But, you know, you get that nugget from Jeff Schultz last Wednesday saying that the Falcons had told Julio, according to his sources, that they weren't going to do a deal until 2019. Then you get that nugget basically a week later on Tuesday that Julio is going to hold out unless he gets a new deal. And then, you know, within like, what, 36, 40 hours of that, the deal does get done. But it is one of those things where, like, those two points, you don't really get a whole lot of other information, and it's interesting. And I'm not trying to throw shade at anybody. I'm not trying to sit here and say, oh, you know, these people are bad at their jobs, or everybody does the best of their job. And for the most part, a good percentage and majority of the people that, you know, do this sort of, you know, cover the Falcons beat and whatnot. I think I respect the vast majority of those people. But it is interesting sort of when you compare it to, you know, the majority of the 28 or 29 other NFL cities out there, you know, depending if you count the Bay Area as a city, that makes it 28. But if you comparatively speaking, you wouldn't have gotten over that week period, you would have gotten more than basically two nuggets of information that we got here in Atlanta about, you know, the big star player. And, you know, you would have had a lot of people sort of, you know, coming out with their sort of sourced information and what they've been hearing and all these sorts of things in an intervening time. And I say that just because I think, you know, and I'm including myself in this, I think it's because you don't get that much information and you sort of wind up filling in the blanks a lot of the times. And I think that led to some of the overreactions. And again, you know, at one point I was saying, oh, it's not a big deal. No big deal. And then at the same time, and then, like, you know, 24 hours later, I'm thinking, like, who is going to miss week one? Oh, no. And so you go through these swings, and it's just simply because you don't get a lot of information. And so it's very easy for people to go down the rabbit holes because they're sort of extrapolating things based off of a very, you know, two sentences written by Jeff Schultz and you know, this release on Tuesday from presumably Julio's representatives. And then you get a tweet from Tiffany Blackman late Wednesday evening, and that's really all you get. And you get like a sentence from Vaughn McClure saying, you know, Julio was ticked at the team for, you know, sort of going to the public about the situation. And like, you're sort of gleaning all this information from basically five sentences worth of info that isn't necessarily clear cut. And so I think that whole situation, and this is something that we can learn from. I always talk about, you know, when you get things wrong, you try to learn from it as opposed to just, you know, moving on to the next thing. And so for future situations, you know, take my advice from what I was saying back in May when I first started talking about this Julio situation. You know, funny enough, you go listen to that podcast. There's a lot of great nuggets in there, and we'll revisit some of those topics that we talked about a little bit later on that specific episode. But yeah, you know, the May version of me was very smart. July version, a little, not so much, but we'll see what happens. But yeah, basically I just wanted to say, I found that interesting, and it's like, okay, yeah, maybe this is another example of there's stuff going on behind the scenes and sometimes we're not privy to that information, and maybe we shouldn't go too far down the rabbit holes trying to extrapolate, you know, what this one sentence, what these four words in the middle of that sentence mean. So that's something to think about in the future. And I'm saying that as much to myself as I am to you guys. Not a whole lot else I thought, you know, from that press conference that I took away majorly. It's not to say that it wasn't interesting or compelling, but I don't think it was, you know, there wasn't any other nuggets that really stood out to me. You know, they talked about Mohamed Sanu being great at running option routes, which I would agree with. I always sort of throw shade at Sanu and say, oh, he only runs four routes. Option routes is one of them. It's the options, the outs, basically, crossers. That's really about it. I'm trying to think, what's the fourth route? Some variation of those. Anyway, so let's talk. We're going to talk a little bit more exclusively about Julio Jones's deal and what the Falcons did to affect the present, and maybe what the Falcons might do in the future involving that. But I do first want to plug LockedOnSports.com, your one-stop hub for the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find NBA, NFL, and Major League Baseball content. Again, LockedOnSports.com, your team every day. So let's talk about Julio's deal, and I won't spend a ton of time describing this, A, because we don't have exact details. We've gotten some sort of vague information about what the Falcons did, but B, also because, as I said back in May and multiple times since then, the Falcons basically just did the exact same thing that Steelers did with Antonio Brown when he was in a similar situation with 3 years left and Julio's with 3 years left. And this was something that, you know, for the last 2 months, for the majority of the last 2 months, with the exception of maybe the last 36 hours, I expected the Falcons to do, and they did it. And so if you've been listening to the podcast for the last 2 months, you've heard me talk about it multiple times. I don't necessarily need to refresh your memories. Again, if you want more further details on it, wrote about it on LockedOnFalcons.com, talked about it multiple times on the podcast. Go check out Joe Corey's column on CBS Sports that he talked about it at the beginning of July. I think it came out July 3rd or July 4th. So go check that out. It's out there in the world. It's on Twitter. So the exact details and whatnot, you can find that elsewhere. But, you know, basically, you know, give or take a couple hundred thousand, it sounds like the Falcons between 2 and 3 million sort of moved 2 and 3 million around. The majority of that coming from 2019, moving it up into 2018. And we'll find out exactly if, you know, there's some reports that said it was cap neutral, which does that mean cap neutral when looking at over the next 2 or 3 years, cap neutral, or cap neutral as opposed to his 2018 cap hit is the exact same, or and it's only changing his 2019 cap hit. Who knows at this point? We'll find that information out in the next couple of days and weeks when we get a little bit more on that. But yeah, I think, you know, we already knew that the Falcons were planning on sort of, and Dimitroff indicated this as well at the press conference, that the Falcons were planning on doing something a little bit more permanent next year, readdressing it again next year. Whether that's permanent or not, we'll discuss a little bit later. But yeah, I think, you know, this was the easiest way for the two sides to get this done. And, you know, because of the whole lack of information and sort of what was said on Tuesday from presumably Julio's camp saying that he wasn't going to report unless something was going to get done, you know, there was some thoughts like, okay, if this was the easiest way to do it, and if they can't even get this done, then maybe Julio wants more than that. And I think that's part of the reason why, you know, like people like myself started thinking like, okay, maybe this will last until the week one or whatever the case may be. Again, paralysis by overanalysis, or however that over, yeah, whatever that statement is. So, you know, this was the easiest way of doing it. It made a lot of sense from the Falcons' standpoint. They get to save face. They basically don't really say, like, you know, we didn't really give Julio a new deal over 3 years. And if someone, other player, you know, come whenever, Deion Jones or Keanu Neal's like, I'm holding out with, you know, 2 or 3 years left on my contract, I want you guys to redo my deal, then they can basically say, okay, well, you know, we've established this precedent where it's like, we'll just, you know, we can take some money from next year. Is 1 million make you happy? 2 million make you happy? They can do that pretty easily moving forward. And it's not necessarily something that they will probably have to do on the regular. So they can sort of keep their policy of only doing deals with 1 year left, except for in special cases like that. Or they, you know, and also Julio sort of gets, you know, and I guess, you know, when we talked about, you know, the conspiracy theories that the NFLPA was behind this, it's interesting when you look at the list of guys that are holding out of camp: Aaron Donald, Julio Jones, Earl Thomas, Le'Veon Bell, some of these other guys that are arguably the elite of the elite players at their respective positions. You know, so if you want to buy into that conspiracy theory, is what I'm saying. But it is interesting when you know, Julio and players everywhere can say, yeah, we won. We beat the team. We got a deal done with 3 years left. So you can do it, guys. You know, keep that chin up. You know, you can beat the team. But it's like a very small victory. It's like, you know, $2 million. Congratulations. you know, you didn't get the $50 million windfall that I think some people were sort of expecting and speculating about these last couple of months. So it's a small victory. Both parties can come out of it and say, yes, we won. We didn't cave. We got the victory. Maybe you can certainly say that Julio. But again, going back to what Dan Quinn said, it seemed like both those statements, the one we heard from Schultz about the Falcons not giving in 2018, and the one we heard, it's just kind of like people surrounding the situation sort of posturing so as to sort of, you know, get that upper hand, so to speak. It seemed like that's basically why I thought it was interesting that Quinn said that, because that's what it more like seems like. But that being said, let's talk a little bit about what Julio Jones and the Falcons might do in 2019 when they permanently address that contract. But maybe you guys are sitting there wondering, you know, as you're listening to this, you're scrolling through your Twitter feed, looking at all the pictures of all the Falcon players in practice, and you're wondering, like, how do these guys get into that such wonderful shape? Well, this is something I certainly wonder about quite a bit. But not to worry, you guys can get in comparable shape as these great, stellar athletes with NordicTrack and their series of training equipment, because you can get those amazing gym quality workouts in the convenience of your own home using treadmills, exercise bikes, incline, as well as strength trainers. With NordicTrack, you can join high energy streamed workouts any time of the day without stepping out your front door. You can join stream workouts in both studios in exotic locations from around the world. You can start your day by running through the streets of Paris and end it by cross-training on the shores of Thailand. Workouts are led by some of the world's top personal trainers to ensure that you meet your very own fitness goals by getting into Falcons training camp shape. You can do that by taking the special offer just for you Locked On Falcons listeners. Get $75 off a NordicTrack purchase by visiting NordicTrack.com/LockedOn and use the offer code Locked On. Again, visit NordicTrack.com/LockedOn and use the offer code Locked On during checkout to save $75 off your purchase. All right, so let's wrap things up by talking about what maybe the Falcons might do in 2019. I'm not a huge fan, as I've said a number of times on this podcast over the last couple of months, not a huge fan of talking about future roster moves, especially now that we're on the eve of training camp and it's like we got, 6 months of football ahead of us. Like, let's talk about that as opposed to, roster moves that are going to happen in the next, 9 to 12 months from now. But given that, football has yet to really be played, you're listening to this is the first day of practice, so we can talk about what is actually happening in practice, on ensuing episodes. But I don't have anything else to fill out this episode, so let's talk a little bit about what could happen next offseason when the Falcons readdress Julio's contract. I'm assuming at this point, given the Falcons' history, that it's not going to be something that you see get done before the draft. It's probably more likely to get done after the draft, at the usual time between May and training camp, when the vast majority of the Falcons restructures get done and extensions get done. I think, right now I'm going to be a little bit of a hypocrite by talking about 2019 stuff, but I do want to say, I feel like when you talk about these things, you talk about these future things, I do think you have to more frame it as a thought experiment. And that's what I'm going to do today, more as, what about this? What about that? Not necessarily a prediction, not necessarily talking about these things with, some semblance of authority, because it's silly at this point, given where we are at this calendar point in the year where so much could change based off of stuff that happens tomorrow. And so much could change based off something that happens next week and the month after that. And certainly over the next 6 months when football is being played. And then in the ensuing 6 months when the Falcons are making roster decisions, drafting players, signing free agents, that could change any of these sort of equations. So it's all speculative at this point. And I think, that we got to keep that in mind. And this is, this is similar to basically what I'm going to do. I'm going to throw a whole bunch of stuff at the wall. 12 months from now, we'll see what sticks. But, this is basically my whole profit shtick. You throw 50 things at the wall, 10 of them stick. You go and say, ha ha, I predicted these 10, I'm a prophet. And then the 40 things that don't stick, you just sort of look around, you sweep them under the rug, and you're like, yeah, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain who said that. That's basically what we do. So talking about what the Falcons might do with Julio next year, I think there's basically three options. I think the first option is basically to do what they did this past offseason. This is exactly what the Steelers did with Antonio Brown in the ensuing year after they first addressed his contract in the way that we talked about before back in 2016. And then they wound up giving him a long-term extension in the final year of his contract in 2017. But that's one way of doing it. I think that makes a lot of sense. And we'll explain some of the reasons why that makes a lot of sense. I think the alternative is, from what a lot of people expect, is that the Falcons will, give Julio this massive long-term extension, next offseason and sort of make him the highest paid wide receiver again. I don't really buy that. I think, you've seen a lot of people talk about, Von McClure's talked about it, various people at the Falcoholic as well as other blogs have talked about it as well. It's like, oh, this could wind up hurting the Falcons because, Odell Beckham's going to get that massive extension and he might get, $20 million a year. That's what he's been talking about for the last couple of years. He wants to be a $20 million man. And does that mean the Falcons are going to have to pay $20 million to sort of have Julio one-up him? I would pump the brakes a little bit on that. I think people might be slightly exaggerating. Again, we don't know. We don't know. But slightly exaggerating the impact of Odell on this deal. I think it's given Dave Gettleman's history, given, you know, some of the Giants' other issues, maybe that they want to invest that money in their offensive line, given that they have some other high-end potential skill position players at running back, wide receiver, and tight end, that then going out and paying Odell Beckham $18, $19, $20 million a year probably isn't the best decision, especially given his history of being a little wishy-washy, a little bit up and down, a little inconsistent. You know, maybe he'll actually catch a pass in a playoff game this year. If he does, then I think, you know, there's a decent chance that Odell Beckham will get paid. But, you know, we saw how Dave Gettleman treated some of his stars in Carolina. Granted, some of those guys were a lot older than what Odell Beckham is likely to be. But, you know, if I'm guessing right here, if I'm placing bets, I would think there's a much higher probability that Odell is going to be stuck with the franchise tag as opposed to getting that monster contract, you know, next March or whenever. That's my guess, but we'll see how it works out. I think the other thing you have to factor in is I don't necessarily know if the Falcons really want to give Julio Jones a long-term deal. And I talked, this was another thing I talked about in that May episode. And if you listen to the MMQB podcast that Andy Benoit is on, they also talked about this last month. You know, I got a guest starring appearance on that podcast when they were sort of talking about the top wide receivers in the league. But basically, to summarize, I was basically saying, like, given his age, given expectation that he might decline a little bit, given, you know, your concerns about his injury potential down the road, there's a legitimate case to be made that, you know, 2018, 2019 might be the last two peak years of Julio Jones. And, you know, you sort of liken this to what happened with Roddy White in 2013 when the Falcons gave him a second contract extension. He was 31 at the time, which is, you know, I think Julio's going to be 31 in 2021, one of those years. I think 2021, he'll be 31. Roddy was a little older than Julio's right now, but, we saw after he got that extension in 2013, Roddy had probably like 8 good games over the next 3 years. Most of which come at the very end of that 2013 season. And a lot of that was due to injuries, not necessarily age, but age was a factor in that because as we saw at the beginning of the 2013 season when he had the ankle injury, which was followed up, I think, by a hamstring injury. And then we saw him struggle in 2014 with a knee injury that really created issues with him, his ability to separate from coverage. I remember going in on Roddy after that Ravens game in 2014 when Dominique Franks basically shut him down in that game, largely because Roddy couldn't separate. And I apologize to Roddy if he happens to be listening. I probably went too hard on you back then, but I know you're not listening, but I'll say it anyway. And basically, that stems from the fact that when you get a little bit older, these nagging injuries, it's harder for the body to recover from these nagging injuries that previously Roddy was gutting his way through. And I think at the beginning of the 2013 season, the Falcons really thought he would gut his way through that ankle injury, and he wound up further injuring himself and then missing like another 5 or 6 games or whatever it was, because I think they were sort of initial expectations was that he'll be healthy by like week 3 or whatever. And then, you know, it wasn't until week 13 until we really saw, you know, good Roddy start to show up. So you do wonder about that with Julio Jones, given his history of injuries. And I know people are like, well, Julio's only missed 3 games in the last 4 years, right? He's not injury prone. That's made up. And it's like, you guys are smarter than that, right? You know, come on. Like, yeah, he's missed only 3 games in 4 years, but he's probably played through injury in like 20, at least 20, you know? And when you really break it down, like, you know, I think I looked at some old injury reports that he's been questionable for about 6. He's probable for about 11, but starting in 2016, the Falcons stopped listing him as probable on their injury report. And, it, you know, I would argue that's because Dan Quinn's kind of massaging the injury report a little bit. And, you know, we saw starting last year, where basically, you know, I think it was in September, like week 3 against the Lions, I think was the first time it happened, where the Falcons basically, Julio didn't practice on Wednesdays. And I don't know if that was every week, but it seemed like it was the vast majority of weeks last year where he would just sit on Wednesday, might get some limited action, might be limited on Thursday, Maybe he'll go full goal. He'll be healthy by Friday. And, you know, then, you know, through whatever sort of loophole that the Falcons could do, they didn't necessarily have to put him on the injury report every Friday. And it was like, oh, yeah, Julio's healthy. He's 100%. He's ready to go. And it's like, no, he's not. You know, you know, and so, like, he plays hurt a lot. And so the question with Julio, and I'm not trying to throw shade at Julio or anything. I'm not trying to, you know, sound doom and gloom or anything. I'm just, this is a thought experiment. This is all I'm painting you a picture. You know, when you already have a guy that has struggled to, you know, deals with these nagging injuries over the course of a season, pretty much every season throughout his career, outside of maybe one or two, you know, you do wonder if these things are going to start to be a little bit more problematic when once he gets on the other side of 30. And do you really want to be committed with, you know, significant financial dollars to a guy that you might only be able to rely on playing, you know, at a high level for, you know, 8 to 10 games a year or something like that? I don't know. And I think that's a valid question. And so I think, you know, before people start saying, got to make Julio, you know, throwing out these 5-year extensions or whatever worth $890 million or $100 million or whatever, building off of the back of Odell Beckham, building off of the back of Mike Evans and Antonio Brown deals and whatnot, I think you can question that a little bit. So I think what you could do as a third option is what the Cardinals have done with Larry Fitzgerald these last couple of years. They basically, a couple of years ago, starting I think in 2015, you know, he had a couple, I think he had 3 years left on his contract. So when I said no one does a deal with 3 years left in contract, technically that is not false. But what they did basically is they sort of reworked like the last two out of those 3 years in his contract, which basically guaranteed him a spot. And then sort of starting the year after, 2 years later, they started doing these 1-year extensions that was just basically like, we're going to sign you through one more year. We're going to sign you through one more year. And, you know, Larry was a little bit older than what Julio is going to be at that point. But you do wonder, you know, that's a strategy that the Falcons could do next year where they maybe give Julio a 2-year extension and maybe that's, you know, worth $20 million a year in quote unquote new money. But in reality, you're just sort of tacking on two dummy years onto a contract. And basically what you're doing for Julio is you're lowering his cap number or whatever, but you're basically guaranteeing that he's going to be around in 2019 and 2020, which would be through the end of his current deal. But you're not you're not necessarily making promises beyond that. And so then you want to get to 2021, which you would do if his current deal expires, and sort of then, you know, maybe like the Cardinals have done these last like 2 or 3 years, is just basically have a series of 1-year deals that you just extend every year and you rework it every year and free up cap space if you need it and don't if you don't, and play it by year to year at that point. I think that's something to think about. I think those are three possible ways that you could sort of deal with this Julio situation next year. Again, not sitting here thinking that one way is going to happen. I just think there's, you know, there's three possible avenues. So I wouldn't necessarily just go all in on this one way is going to happen, the long-term extension, the 1-year restructure, or the sort of short-term extension, which is the Larry Fitzgerald way. But those are three possible avenues that the Falcons could take on the contract. And that will be something that we will certainly be talking about in 2019. And, you know, let it simmer in your brains for a day or two, and then, you know, we'll be talking about training camp, and so you can sort of forget about it. And then if one of these avenues prove true come, you know, 12 months from now, I'll be like, see, I told you guys the Falcons would do something like this. I'm a genius. I'm smarter than everybody. It's like, no, I'm not really smarter than anybody. Just a little bit more open-minded to the possibilities. You throw stuff at a wall, one of it sticks, and it's like, yeah, I got that. I nailed that, you know. I gave you three possible outcomes. It's not like I was hedging or anything. It was like, I knew the one that came true was the one. The other two I was just throwing out there just as a thought experiment. You remember that? Yeah, that was, you know, that's my plan at least. So, but we'll see what happens with Julio next year. And, you know, in the meantime, we got 6 months of football that we are all excited about. And I can't wait to sort of dig into all the happenings, you know. Training camp is upon us. I'm just hoping that guys stay healthy. That's all I care about. You know, I want to see how the young guys perform in games, but you know, the key guys, the guys that aren't necessarily, you know, competing for roster spots, including Julio Jones, just be a little healthy. Just, you know, take it easy. You know, go at 80%, you know, that's all I'm saying. Like, you know, just let's do some walkthroughs. That's all I'm asking for. So, if you guys want to provide your feedback, you can do so on Twitter. I'm at FalFans. It's podcast related. Just let me know in the tweet. If it is podcast related, just go ahead and send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. If you prefer Facebook, Locked On Falcons is a Facebook page. Give us a like while you're there. You can also send an email, lockedonfalcons@mail.com. If you hate social media, you can send an email. You'll also visit lockedonfalcons.com or falfans.com. Leave a comment at both of those websites where the podcast is posted daily. So we got practices and other stuff that we're going to be talking about. This is probably be the last show until Monday, unless something else major happens. You know, the Falcons trade for Earl Thomas, then I guess we'll have to do a weekend show, but probably anything else will probably wait till Monday. So look forward to wrapping up, you know, that first weekend. They're not trading for Earl Thomas. I was saying that more facetiously. I know some of you are like, wait, they're going to trade for Earl. No, calm down. Calm down. They're not trading for Earl Thomas. You know, they're not talking about, oh, we're giving Ricardo Allen an extension and we're going to trade Earl Thomas. No, it's not going to happen. But anyway, until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.